Welcome to The Pursuit of Purpose, a podcast made possible by SkyLife Success, a SkyPass Group company. Join Krish Dunham, an author and speaker whose messaging has been described as the junction where God's ability and man's availability meet hope's accessibility.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of The Pursuit of Purpose. This is your host, Krish Dunham, coming to you again from Dallas, Texas. And hopefully we'll try to keep up the pace of trying to introduce at least one segment a week owing to the increasing schedule in other arenas, including travel. Last week, we began an ambitious project called Losing the Culture War, which may be about 4 or 5 episodes in length. We titled the byline, The Character Assault and the Christian Answer, and I did give you a slight caveat that I am coming to you from a moral framework that encompasses and embraces the Judeo-Christian identity. If those of you listening to this subscribe to another worldview, I want you to embrace the truths and the tenets of morality that you understand and lean and learn on to see if this makes sense to you as well. The deviation was the first part of what we talked about in Losing the Culture War, where we introduced to you 4 characters. Aldous Huxley's famous works, Brave New World and Brave New World Revisited, and the concepts of stability, identity, and community. Then we talked about George Orwell and his seminal work, 1984, along with Animal Farm, where his 3 moods that he predicted were war will be peace, freedom will be slavery, and ignorance will be strength. We introduced the Canadian philosopher Marshall McLuhan, whose famous words were, "The medium is the message, and all our assumptions have outlived their uselessness," and culminated with introducing to you Neil Postman and his work, Amusing Ourselves to Death, where he studied whether we were in a Huxleyan world or an Orwellian world. Even though both were dystopian, one predicted totalitarianism in what we would read, and the other pure entertainment and our apathy towards reading. And Neil Postman settled on the side of Huxley. Today, let's look at the distortion after the deviation. What did these things mean to our culture war? And as we end up with this series, a couple of episodes down the road, we'll bring the answer. But today, let's focus on some of the other problems that emanated from that early justification of what kind of world are we in. Now, if we look back in terms of history and go back a couple of millennia or even further than that and look at all of the things written, you'll begin to realize that history has been replete with this concept of philosophers taking center stage every so often, revisiting the thoughts that existed, offering new medium of instruction, telling ourselves and telling others and telling each other that the only way we can understand the world is through a constant evolution of thought. If we had a look at the elements, some said we can simplify thought if we can understand whether they represent the elements of earth, wind, and fire. Others came along and said, "I think, therefore I am." Some others came along and said, "I am, therefore I think." Whatever it is, philosophy began some of the great distortion of right and wrong, yes and no, black and white, good and bad. At the core of every family, at the core of every relationship, at the core of every meaningful encounter are some basic truths. And these truths cannot be violated because they actually emanate from a God-given conscience, a moral law, and a moral lawgiver. Anytime external validation begins for internal distortion, let me put that in the words of Huxley, who later on said, "I want my life to have no purpose because then I can continue to participate in my own erotic dysfunction." The biblical answer has always been that man is fallen. In the initial days, when man was allowed to have eternal life, man chose the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Now, whether you believe in the story or not is immaterial. Man's search for meaning is different when man decides that he is going to be the meaning, which means no matter what his behavior is, he is going to introduce a meaning around it that is going to be based on some of the attributes that pacify society. Now, every deviation throughout human history has resulted in a distortion, which means when you look at that deviation and you look at the behaviors that emanate from that deviation, there's a distortion that takes place that is A, validated by the philosophers. It is then formulated by the scientists. It's articulated by the existential theorists of that time. And all of it is to make man relevant in terms of human understanding and human existence. And the more we try and do this, the more we distance ourselves from the original intent of right and wrong, yes and no, that is given to everybody at the level of a conscience. When you begin to debate this, saying the very way we think is distorted because of the way we are fragmented, and then you begin to introduce other parameters, you begin to slowly seep away from that or slip away from that which was original intention. So what are some of the moods that emanated from this word distortion? Again, look at in your own lifetime, or if you don't want to peel back the pages of history, just go back to the year 1970. The Vietnam War is on. There is a raging upheaval all over the world. Korea is in the framing of its new self as the 1950s saw the demarcation of that continent. Cambodia, Vietnam, the killing fields of that place, and Pol Pot. The Cold War is now in full swing. Nikita Khrushchev came in the middle 60s to the United Nations, thumped his shoe on the desk there and said that we will make slaves of all of you, the Bay of Pigs in 1964. And Kennedy saw the advent of communism as a superpower and the fight between capitalism and communism. Cuba began to raise its ugly head on the heels of its own revolution about 90 miles from the United States. And then this was the world that we were watching. India had gotten independence in 1947 and a new set of leaders began to emerge. And then India went through a big upheaval in the middle 70s with the declaration of emergency and all of these things. But every part of the world, when you look at the 1970s, something very distinct happened. China began to change its stance from the totalitarianism of Mao's complete control to create what was called as controlled capitalism. Japan began the advent of setting some goals that post-World War II saw that country decimated after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and they said they would emerge as a technological and a superior power. So what was this distortion that was offered? Equality replaces fairness was the first one. Man was somehow posited as designed that let's look at the equality of man, not through creation, but through the lens of man. Within created order, we were all created equal, but we were created different. There are 8.2 billion plus people on planet Earth, and in the 1970s, there were only have been six. But in that, there was not one that was like the other. So that we were always created different, we looked different, we acted different, we sounded different, and we ate and participated in different cultures. But in the 60s, with the civil rights movement, came this advent of equality, which was needed to overcome the throes of what was being offered as great injustice. That took place again in the 80s when you look at what apartheid did in the 70s and 80s in South Africa, and we had the revolution and the counter-revolutions of Soweto. All this to say that equality came main and center in the 70s, saying we need to be equal. And our equality was immediately ascribed to identity, whether it was gender, whether it was behavior, whether it was attraction, whether it was marriage. Equality replaced fairness. Now, in fairness, people say, I don't want you to change the rules, just let me play the game. We were all designed when Dr. King said, I have a dream that my four children will not be judged by the color of their skin, by the content of their character. As a young immigrant, I focused on the word character. Character is the ability to have pride in the mundane. The mundane is what you do every day. So I said that if I have pride in what I do every day, I put my head down. Dr. King also said, if you don't want someone standing on your back or straddling your back, stand erect. Now, some of these things may have not worked the way they were supposed to work in the face of those that were undergoing great evil and who had witnessed 200 years of it. But if you take a step back and ask yourself some very basic questions, regardless of where you are in history and regardless of what has happened to you, equality can never replace fairness, because equality means you want equality in outcome. And that is never going to be a work, because work is what determines your outcome. Now, if you want equality in terms of opportunity, because some people were marginalized, I can understand that, and you line everybody up at the starting block and said, listen, let your talent win, but we're going to let everybody play the race. But if you're now going to change midstream, saying we're going to change the rules because some people were not taught the difference between corners and squares and lines and all of that, and you begin to introduce these attributes, you begin a distortion that you cannot control. Because where do you stop? Where do you stop with changing the rules of a game so that you can ensure equality? Equality in created order, that man was designed for accomplishment, engineered for success, and endowed with the seeds of greatness, said Zig Ziglar. Endowed by a creator God, said Thomas Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence. That equality in created order is part of the human existence. We were given dominion over earth. That was our equality. We were asked to till the earth, to plow it, to make sure that we married and reproduced and populated generations and became the seed for humanity's extension. This was all equality. But equality replaced fairness halfway through the game, which means as we all lined up to run the race, and I want to put this as simply as I can. You started running the race and everybody said, okay, I finally have a chance to exhibit my skill. My identity doesn't determine it. My color doesn't determine it. My origin doesn't determine it. I have made myself to the front of the line. And I'm just giving a race, which is everybody has an ability to run. Everybody has an ability to train. Now, halfway through the race, if someone says, okay, the people in line 7, 8, and 9 only have to run 300 meters. The others have to run 400 meters. Now, that can go on for a merry period of time till someone says, wait a minute, I mean, that's not fair, because there are people in lane 10 and 11 who actually need to only run 200 meters. This is what equality does if you change the rules mid-game, if you change the goalpost mid-game. Equality allows you to play. Fairness allows you to win. Fairness is what has historically always given that dignity. And I think one of the great distortions was equality replaced fairness. And as a result of it, some of the tenets of dignity of labor, pride in work, ability to control your outcome all went to the wayside, because large groups of people began to line up and say, okay, this I deserve, which was fine. They probably did because someone took it away from them. But then others saying this you deserve was where the distortion took place, because the ones canvassing for these people are never marginalized. I've never met one person who canvassed for someone else's need to have equality come from the same background. They all live in different neighborhoods. They all live in bigger mansions. They all live behind gated communities. They all drive nicer cars. And the ultimate idiocy of all of this is wearing a gown that costs $5,000 that, say, tax the rich, and going to a gala that costs $30,000 to make a statement is not about equality or fairness. That's just optics of stupidity. The second is justice replaced mercy. Now, justice and mercy are both the things. When I look at it from a biblical edict, do I want justice? No. Justice is when you get what you deserve. You do the crime, you do the time. You make a mistake, you get the punishment. You don't do the work, you don't get the reward. That's just. That is what the world was historically about. Mercy, on the other hand, was a God-given mercy that says, I'm not going to give you what you do deserve. And let me explain that. Imagine you're in a court of law. You're on trial for your life. And the attorney who's defending you is now out of options. And the lawyer who's prosecuting you has all the guns loaded and all the evidence is mounting against you. And at that point, the judge says, listen, I've heard everything, I've heard all the evidence, but I'm going to grant you mercy. And the mercy I'm going to grant you is the forgiveness, a complete pardon, which means now you have received what you didn't deserve. You deserve justice for what you did, but instead you got clemency, you got mercy. Historically, the world operated on that mercy. Many people got what they didn't deserve, in the sense they did deserve something else, but they got that clemency. Historically, mercy has worked better both in terms of absolution of sin, but also participation in society. But justice is interesting because when justice replaces mercy at a human level, forget the God level, we all deserve God's justice, but we get his mercy, and for that we are grateful. But at a human level, justice demands a judge. And this judge intrinsically is not going to be someone who is going to uphold that which was already written. This judge is going to be someone who is going to now, we are going to depend on his judgment. And humanity began this dependence in such a way that it rose to a great high level in almost every country. The Supreme Court of that country now becomes the doctrine of that nation. And historically, when you look at democracies and republics that have been framed, Congress was supposed to pass the laws. The executive branch was supposed to put them into, write them into law. Congress, meaning in the U.S., would be both the lower and the upper house. The president can either sign or veto it. And if it was veto-proof, it would be overturned. But if it was vetoed, it would have its own check and balance. The judiciary was just supposed to enforce the laws on the book. Historically, if I look back, I think every law, and someone articulated this wisely, every law seems to have been written to protect the previous law. It's never protected to, never written to protect the people. And that's why this constant clamor for justice, you know, some justices vote one way to uphold an issue that lasts 50 years, other justices vote in the opposite way, and the upheaval is. What we need is the mercy of God to look at our solutions and ask ourselves, are we doing anything to the furtherment and the betterment of humanity in a right, just in a humane way, or are we propagating idiocy because we want to be in charge? When justice replaces mercy, a moral lawgiver is abdicate. Man's morals usher in a new law. And these are vital. Some of these distortions have created great havoc through society. Now, I know some of us don't think like this when we wake up every day, but I want you to pay close attention and I want you to circulate these messages to others. First was the deviation, then was the distortion. Equality has now replaced fairness. Justice has replaced mercy. A moral lawgiver has been abdicated. Man's moral laws have ushered in this new law. And you and I stand on the corner of the street helpless as we watch this parade of stupidity in front of us, asking ourselves one simple question, which I want you to ask this week. Where has common sense gone? I think common sense has died the death of a thousand qualifications, because if it is common, we don't want to make it to make sense. If it makes sense, we don't want it to be common. Until next time, this is Krish Dunham. Good luck. God bless.
And that concludes another episode of The Pursuit of Purpose with Krish Dunham, brought to you by Skylife Success. Please subscribe, rate, and visit us on the web at krishdunham.com and skylifesuccess.com, where you can find our social media links and access to additional resources. Till next time, happy learning and happy living.